irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Carulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Wake up Hollywood! How are you?
I'm fantastic.
Wait, people don't even know who you are yet. You're already like, I'm in. On the other microphone, co-hosting tonight, Dimitri Cerny. Say hello!
Hello.
Now, Dimitri, you've been in the hot seat as a guest for our songwriting team, The Elements. But tonight, you're in the driver's seat, man.
I'm in the driver's seat.
Oh, yeah.
I'm coming for Jimmy Fallon.
That's
this
right.
This is the first step.
Go easy, all right? How was your week, man? What did you do?
It was great. Another hang with the family, you know. My daughter, my wife, and just, you know, staying in the backyard trying to stay cool.
That's right.
Swimming in my daughter's little mini pool.
Dude, that slow-mo picture of your daughter just kind of like just hitting the water is one of the cutest things I've ever seen, man.
She's fierce.
She is fierce. And she's like, I'm ready. Go.
Yeah.
Throw me down.
Yeah. she is. I don't know who she has that from. But
When you were a baby, were you good with the water? Were you kind of like,
I don't know. I was good in the snow. But how about your weekend? How was your weekend?
I went to Summerfest.
Yeah,
played Summerfest.
Wow,
it was awesome.
Was
it was crazy. It was there was no room for error. Mm-hmm. We flew at 8 in the morning.
Wow.
We went all the way to Milwaukee. We got there half an hour late. We got to our rental cars, got to the hotel, checked in. Everybody just quickly showered. We got to a restaurant, had a quick bite to eat. And then we hit mad traffic because Paul McCartney was the headliner.
Wow.
That. So, like, all of Milwaukee was just a circus full
now,
of traffic.
Now, let's back up for a second.
Yeah.
You have a band, the Nikhil Carulla Band.
That's right.
How many members did you take with you?
I only took five this
five.
Time. Yeah.
Okay.
In the last couple of years, I've only taken five just because it's easier to deal with. It's so, like, when you have six, seven, eight, it's like having like a circus full of performers that you just like, hey, where's the acrobat? Oh, where's the lion tamer? Everybody, yeah, you know. Easy. It's not that kind of party.
Okay,
right?
It's not that kind of party.
Hey.
All right. Good to know. So you were in traffic.
I was in
you
traffic.
You played at the same time as Paul McCartney played?
We played the same time.
Wow.
You're asking all the right questions. Look at you, like a novice.
I'm trying here.
So we actually got to the stage a little bit late. But the crazy thing is I was asked to do a song for a charity, which you know about. Actually, you helped mix this song. So
that's right.
They asked me to do a song based on a kid's story that was suffering from some terminal illness. And I had to like comb through all these funny stories about different characters or people. And I found this kid's story from Tucson. His name is Evan. That's all I know. And he wrote this story about a birthday party.
Oh.
And for some reason, I was like, this is so awesome. Like, it's just so random. Like, there was no cohesiveness in the story. I'm like, this is the one I want to write this, a song to this.
Awesome.
And then at first they were like, you know, we want you to write a song, like, you know, that this story inspires, you know, from you.
Mm-hmm.
You have full artistic license. And I'm like, you know what? I want to use this kid's phrases because that's what just makes it even cooler. Like, someday this kid may look at this song 20 years from now and be like, this guy took the, you know, my words and just made a melody with
that's
it,
amazing.
Which is
yeah.
super cool.
Yeah.
And the funny thing was also to make it cohesive. You know, so I added like two or three lines just to tie in certain things. But we had this organization called Sing Me a Story bring the entire studio to our dressing room.
Wow.
And I had to record. I had 15 minutes to record, and I had band members like knocking on the door, trying to get their instruments while I'm trying to record this. But luckily, on the last take, the third take, that was the one we kept, and I made it through the whole song. And
that's all it took. Three takes.
Wow. And you know what? Really, it was only one full take because during the first take, somebody knocked on the door, and it's like it was like so nerve wracking because I'm sitting there trying to play this like cool little acoustic tune, and then you just hear you hear this, and you're recording, and like everybody in the room is like, "What do? Do we keep going? Do we stop?" And I'm like, "We're stopping. Right. I'm not going to have knocking in this track, you know." So finally, one of the guys said, "I'm going to guard the door so nobody gets in. I will wrestle them to the floor." But long story short, we ended up playing a killer set. We opened for Eric Hutchinson on a stage I haven't played called the U.S. Cellular Stage. And we covered Prince. We did Cream. We did Wind Cries Mary. We did some Stevie Wonder. We did 90 minutes of original songs, too. We covered a song. I did an interpolation of a song that you and I wrote for Ziggy Marley called Start It Up. I just threw it in there.
That's a great tune.
It is. That's right. Little plug. I like it. The shameless plug. You're perfect for radio,
I learned from the best.
But the coolest thing was we finished the show, and Eric Hutchinson's entire band came out of the room. We saw them. First, I didn't even know that was his band, you know? Mm-hmm. So I saw them kind of like around watching us play, but I didn't know they were in the band or anything. And then they all came out of the dressing room. They were like, "We watched your entire set. Your band is insane. Like, that was one of the best performances we've seen." And I had met Eric Hutchinson before. He didn't remember. But the cool thing was he hunted me down. And while I was packing up my cables, he was like, "Dude, your band is really something
special."
Dude,
that's amazing.
Yeah, it was awesome. Wow. And I'm like such a huge fan of him. So I had like a little kid moment where I was like, "I really think you're awesome, man." And he was like, "Dude, you guys were just slaying. Like, it was really something special to watch." And he's like, "Are you from Milwaukee?" I'm like, "No." He's like, "I heard you played every stage at this festival." I'm like, "We've been playing it for 10 years.
Wow.
You know, the cool thing is he's going to start writing music with The Element, and we're going to collaborate in some future projects.
That's amazing.
So that was cool. Then we pack up our gear. And as we're packing up our gear, Paul McCartney's playing right over our shoulder in the amphitheater, and we just start screaming like little girls. He played something, you know, the George Harrison song, and then he played Obla Di Obla Da. And we just all start screaming, like, "I love you, Paul!" You know, like just being total music geeks. And then they brought us back into the grounds, and they parked us right behind Common Stage. And Common got out of his SUV right as we literally pulled up right next to him. So we got out of the car. We got to hang out with Common for a little
bit.
Yeah. Wow. And it was like such an eclectic night of music, too, like with Eric Hutchinson, Common, Young the Giant.
Right.
L. King was there, who was actually Rob Schneider's daughter. I don't know if you knew that.
Actually, I did know that.
Oh, you were like, "No, I didn't. I did know that. Look at you. You're like an all-wise, like, wizard.
Guru."
So we got to hang with Common for a little bit, and then I saw Eric Hutchinson's set. They did a great job. It was like a great night of music, and you know, Summerfest is always just it's a real gas, man. Like,
now, how is that when you watch Eric perform after your show? Do you have a lot of fans coming up to you?
We did some signings at the merch tent, which is cool, you know. But I have a rule: whenever I open for somebody, no matter who else is playing and what other part of the festival, like, the band members can go see whoever they want, but for me, like, I'm going to watch the person that we're opening for.
Right.
So it was cool. I got to see him play a lot of songs I hadn't heard before, and he did some cool – he also did some interpolations of, like, quotes of, like, soul tunes in the middle of some of the songs I love, and it was awesome. I mean, he's great.
Yeah.
The coolest thing I saw him do, like, in the middle of one of his songs – he jumped off the stage and walked through the crowd and walked all the way to the back of the crowd. And he was high-fiving everybody, singing just with a mic and taking selfies with people while he's singing. Yeah. I mean, it was like,
dude,
you're such a cool dude. I mean,
and I mean, how often does the person you open for actually hang out and watch your set?
Dude,
does that happen often?
It doesn't happen as much as it should, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Sometimes you get lucky, and we've had over the years a couple acts that have checked us out and been like, "Dude, that was great." Mm-hmm. But the majority of the time, I would actually say not everybody is watching. They're like in their dressing room, partying. They're hanging out with a girl. They're hanging out with their families, which I totally understand.
Right.
But, you know, it was really amazing. Not only did his whole band watch us, but he did too, you know? And I didn't realize that he was watching us when his band you know, came out and said, "What's up?" I said, "Yeah, tell Eric." You know, I knew he wasn't in the dressing room at the time. And then Eric said, "No, man, I watched the whole thing. Crazy. You guys were great." Wow. So big yeah. props to him. Yeah, he's such a talent, and he's such a good dude.
He's a very cool guy,
totally,
too, right?
Totally. Yeah. So wow. I'm happy to be back. You and I have been writing some tunes. We've been busy at work.
We had a busy afternoon.
That's
huh?
right.
Yeah, fun it's afternoon.
Fun.
Yeah.
It's been fun. It's but now, fun. I think our special guest has arrived. Mr. Adam Gus, say hello.
Hey, what's happening?
Oh, our studio audience loves you already.
They have great taste.
They do.
I like the taste of your audience.
So, Adam Gus, let me just... I'm going to intro you because... This guy, to me, is the best drummer that I've ever played with. I've played with guys of the Apollo Theater Band. I've played with so many great cats in Los Angeles. But there is no pocket greater than Mr. Adam Gus. You're one of the best drummers. I am so excited to interview you today, or tonight, I should say tonight. But I want to start, let's go back, let's go way back. What was the trigger for you to want to play drums, and how old were you, and what was the thing that you said, this is it?
Well... First, thanks. High praise with all the people you've worked with, and great to be a part of it, working with you through the years. And man, looking back early on, what was the trigger? It was probably shop class. I found these two little pieces of wood in shop class in seventh grade, and I fashioned them into drumsticks because I was bored in class.
That's awesome.
And cool, I took them home, and I remember playing along with a Halloween record, this heavy metal band that I was totally into in high school, and I would like play along, and I was able to play along perfectly with this double bass chops on this track, and I felt like I was in Nirvana.
You mean this wasn't your first lick?
Oh man, no, I had no cymbals. I was on the edge of my bed. I was bashing. And they were actually square pieces of wood. So I was so wow. out of my mind, like enjoying, like pounding out these rhythms that I didn't notice that I was completely shredding my hands. And so my hands are getting all bloody, and I didn't even
wow.
know
wow.
Yeah.
You were vicious with them.
I know. Well, that's when I was like, wait a minute, what just happened? I like completely didn't feel like, you know, this wood tearing my hands apart. I was like, oh, I must like this.
And what was the metal band that was like the band?
Halloween.
Halloween.
Yeah, German metal band. I was into Slayer and Metallica and Anthrax and Megadeth and Testament and Halloween, yeah.
Halloween. At least say it with like, you know, like they want you to say it.
Halloween. Let's talk German, man.
Yeah, they were German. Yes, man, a lot of great.
The best metal bands actually do come
man,
from Germany.
The German
that
production
scene,
of metal is
it's,
awesome.
It's the best. Yeah, it's the best.
Yeah, I think the language suits itself really well for that style.
It does sound a little angry.
Yeah, absolutely. It works great.
Now, when you were playing, as you were 13, must have been 12 or 13,
yeah.
around then?
Yeah, 14 with the sticks, first drum set at 15.
And did you play in the school, like band, marching band, jazz band?
I played tuba and trumpet.
Nice.
In the school band growing up. And I started on piano. Never loved any of those. I was the only kid big enough to carry the tuba around the football field.
So you didn't choose that one. No, they were like, give this guy the tuba.
I was the worst trumpet player in the band. So they were like, hey, this tall kid, he can carry the tuba. So they put me on tuba. And I liked it. You know, this big saxophone resonating around me. I kind of liked it more. But then I decided to get the drum set.
And did you ask for a drum set from your parents? Did they give it to you for your birthday? How did you get your drum set?
I was working at Walgreens, and I... Oh, wait, that was my first official big rock kit. So the first drum set was actually from my parents. Yeah,
bought it
from
were like,
my brother. My brother was... my brother and I were going to be Van Gust.
That's... I love it!
I played guitar, I played drums. Yeah, we were going to be the next brother rock duo.
Oh, that's awesome.
And he had a friend who was selling a kit, and that's when I bought it. And that real moment was... I couldn't figure out how to turn the snare drum on. I got it, and, you know, snare drum's a little complicated for a kid. My brother figured it out, and I remember the first time he hit it, it was tuned really low. And I remember that sound was like...
Boom!
And I was just like, wow, this is mine. I can make that sound. Holy shit.
And your parents like, yes, you can make that sound. Yeah. You certainly can.
Yep. Wow, I haven't thought about this in a while.
So was the band that you did with your brother, was that the first band you were in?
Yep, The Firm Worm.
The Firm Worm. I love it. That's dangerous, man.
The first record was called Out of the Hole.
Oh, dude.
A bunch of Catholic schoolboys, rather irreverent.
Out of the wall, man.
Yeah, I was huge into metal, and then I got the Dave Weckl instructional video, and then jazz entered my life.
And how many people were in that first band?
It was my brother and I, John Boho, bass player, and then another guitar player kid who I don't remember.
Did you have any like sibling fights in rehearsals?
No. Oh, that's good. My brother and I always got along really well. I pretty much just idolized him, so you know, there's no room for fighting. Right. I know. He was. Brother's a freaking genius. So,
that's awesome.
And your parents, were they musicians or?
Thank God for them. They were not musicians at all. But I remember my brother was playing drums downstairs once, and I like heard it, and I was like, "Man, am I that loud?" My mom's like, "Yes, dear, but you play better than your brother."
That's awesome. She's like, "You're gonna be the drummer." Just make sure when you record, you're playing drums.
Yeah, that's how that works exactly.
All right, so you were saying you got into jazz.
Yep.
So what was the trigger for that? What was the catalyst for you to get into jazz music?
I watched Dave Weckl's instructional video, and it was pretty mind-blowing, and that immediately gets you into Chick Corea, electric band. I remember then buying Now He Sings, Now He Sobs, Chick Corea, and it wasn't Dave Weckl.
But that's a huge contrast, going from metal to jazz.
Yeah.
Like, you skipped a lot of steps in between
them. Yeah, well, I was into the super technical stuff. You know, metal drummers, they have lots of chops. And
right.
So I loved that. And then, of course, Weckl had a lot of chops. And then that brought me to Chick Corea, which got into, like, Return to Forever and a lot of other...
Did you get into, like, bebop? Any of the bebop guys?
Yeah. Sure. Some into Miles, but mostly Chick. He was in high school. Like, pretty much any Chick Corea record I bought, I fell in love with it. So I was like, well, this is a winning scenario. I just buy his records and I love him, so... Yeah, Chick Corea.
And you never had it? Did you have any formal training? Did anybody not really much.
It was kind of I learned technique from slow motion on Dave Weckl's instructional video.
Dude,
I was
that's
all
crazy.
French, all French grip. Like, I figured out how to hit hard playing French. Yep, I would go, you know, I remember on the VCR player.
Pause. And then fast forward.
Yep, and go by step by step. You could go one frame at a time, and I'd be like, one frame. Next frame. What is it? Okay, there it is, like that. And that's how I taught myself.
Your parents were probably like, I think our son is crazy.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, it was lots of hours.
So your work ethic was shaped at how old? 15?
Yeah.
16?
Every spare minute.
That's crazy.
Yep, I heard, and I was like, wow, if
that
I
was it.
Make that sound the rest of my life, I'll be thrilled.
So. And you never played in high school band or anything like
that?
No,
I never did any of that. I was the thing, you know what was inspiring about high school band for drums was the tuba section was close to the snare drummers. Mm-hmm. And our snare drummers were so terrible. I was like, dude, I could do that.
you were like, get out of there.
No, I was like, damn.
You're like, let me show you my first lick. Give me that cymbal over there.
Now my first lick was doo 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 doo. That was my first lick. I was proud of that.
That's
one.
A good one. That's a good one.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this now. When you finished high school, how did you know you wanted to go after music?
Because that's all I did all day.
And you went to a very prestigious music school. You went to North Texas, right?
Yeah, I went to a school in between St. Mary's College for 2 years. I went there for music business because I wasn't completely...
Confident. You can say it.
Well, it's risky. Yeah,
It is. And it's
scary.
Know, my dad, of course, you know, was wanting to be the realist in the family. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, well, you should do business in college. And so I went to music business. And then I went to St. Mary's. They're just like, dude, all you do is play drums.
You're like, what, me?
Yeah, there was a teacher there. He's like, you need to go to North Texas. It's like you, the kind of work ethic you have, the way you play, what you're into, you need to do that. So I actually did a audition tape with this keyboard player, Scott Warner, at St. Mary's. Because he wanted to help me get a scholarship there. And thanks to it was largely part to his letter of recommendation and a CD we did together that got me the scholarship to go there, which I couldn't have gone without.
That's crazy.
So yeah, Scott Warner, if you're listening, thank you, brother.
See? Oh. He's probably like, I hear Adam's call.
Yeah, thank God for that guy. He really expanded. Because the rest of the people at the school wanted to keep me there. You know, they wanted me to do a graduate program there in music. And it was so, there were no other really... ambitious musicians there, I would say, or not to the level that I was.
And most people don't know, like, UNT, like University of North Texas, Don Henley went to school there. He actually dropped out of the music program, but he still went there to study because the program was so prestigious.
Yeah.
Who are some of the other players that have come out of that school?
Oh, man. But jeez.
Keith Carlock, right?
You gotta bring up Keith, dude. Oh my god, he's the first drummer I saw at North Texas.
You were like kind of roommates for a little bit, right?
He was, yeah, there was a house that he lived in that I was coming into at the tail end of, and Jesus Christ, man. That guy.
He's the drummer for Steely Dan. Yep. He played with John Mayer for a little bit.
I know, man.
He's a beast. He's a beast.
Yeah, I mean, Sting. And then James Taylor was just like, come on, dude.
Like, man, get out of here, man.
All my favorites. You got to play with all my favorites. Like, oh, yeah, we went to that. John Mayer.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. With Keith Carlock. That was for your birthday, man.
Yep. Yeah.
It
was
a good time. That was a good time. Little bro date.
Yeah. Yeah. Great seats.
Yeah.
Fuck, that was awesome.
he obviously has a man crush on Keith Carlock.
I had to stop listening to the guy.
No, he's great.
He was the first. What was it? The Karma Cafe. Saw him play there. Yeah, Jeff Young, guitar player, and he just his sound, his feel, his energy is. It would just sounded like exactly how I wanted to sound, how right. I would want any drummer to sound.
Like that's it. I got to ask you this because I've never asked you this question, but. How did you meet our NK Band bassist, Matt Spencer?
Matt was a guitar major at UNT. So that's how we got to play together. We played in some bands.
He played guitar. Was he playing guitar with you
he
at the time?
He was playing guitar at the time.
Were you like, you'd be a much better bass player?
I know. He got into bass. Yeah, he's got himself into it.
I'm picturing like the Muppet Baby versions of you and Matt going, hey, you want a jam? Sure, dude.
That's how it is, man. Yep, totally. Jan's Hall. Yeah, we were...
And you probably got into fusion too. You probably got into funk. Like, did you do any ensembles while you were at UNT?
Yeah, pretty much all the ensembles. Yeah, all the kind of ethnic percussion ensembles. And then you do a lot of classical stuff. So there was marimba and timpani. Concert snare was great, man. Thank God for Ron Fink, man. He schooled me on like really, you know, dynamics on snare and like really having the touch for concert snare. I got a lot out of that. Timpani, I hated. Marimba was fun. Four mallets and stuff, but
well, let's get to a little bit to the funk stuff. We're gonna showcase something that Adam and I did. We're just gonna play a little snippet of it, and then Adam's gonna talk about it. We're gonna play All Up to You. This is from Live Vibes with the Nikhil Kurula Band. Thank you very much. This one's called All Up to You. The good days of playing with you, Adam.
Yeah, that
funky,
was a fun
funky.
Gig.
So let's talk about that for a little bit. You go first.
Yeah, well, just hearing you talk about Summerfest kind of got me a little nostalgic. I've definitely gotten more entrenched in staying in town lately, so I miss going out of town with you. But.
Oh, dude, I miss playing with you, period. Even rehearsals, dude. I'm like, I miss you, Adam.
Dang, you too, dude. And you know what? This live record, I kind of want to talk about something that happened with this. Because it's kind of part of growing up and becoming more of a professional and what that means. I remember you and I had an argument about this live record.
That's right. That's right. I remember that.
And we didn't talk for maybe a couple of years.
No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't.
Oh, that was bad. That was a bad fight. That was a bad fight.
No, it wasn't that long.
Yeah, it was a while.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't remember ever not talking to you for that long.
It was a while.
Because we had gigs. We did gigs at the time.
No.
I think it was like 4 months. Maybe four months.
It was longer. Okay. Well, it was a span of time. Maybe it was so long without you, it felt like 2 years.
We're having a little moment.
But it was just something that I kind of would like to send a message in a bottle back to my past self at that point. And it's like, you really want to, I guess, and for anyone who's moving to LA and kind of a musician or in the creative community at all, and don't limit people who are trying to create something. I think this is
really important. Oh, man, give me chills, man.
Yeah, I think this is a real important concept that I wish that I had more better control over when I first moved here. Because now I'm kind of starting my own media company. It's still in the fledgling stages, and I'm learning a lot, getting my ass kicked and enjoying it. But there's this Red Rocket upstart. It's a blog, and it's about entrepreneurs and CEOs. And I remember reading one of their blogs about what a CEO is, and it made me think of Nikki Carulla. and I really suggest to musicians to kind of study about what like a CEO does and what some kind of new startup businesses, how they generate. Not just in case you ever want to start one yourself, but also to notice those people out there who are in your network or who you're meeting who have these qualities.
Dude, we just switched. Now I'm the guest and you're the host.
No, it's you bring up a really interesting point.
No, it really
because
is. Really is.
Isn't a musician a walking business, pretty much? Yeah. Like just a guy that walks around, you know, who's, you know, looking for business, and you're pretty much a storefront.
Yeah.
In a way, right?
It's true.
You are your own
we're on store.
Yeah, there's a great book, The War of Art, by Stephen Pressfield, and he talks about be yourself. Inc. Like, treat yourself as your own company. And I think it's bigger than that. I think you should, even if whether you want to be own your own small business or not, I mean, if people who are in the music industry who are upwardly mobile are their own small business. And if you can recognize those qualities that are successful traits in small business owners, you can kind of figure out who you're with at any given time. Like, wait a minute, this guy seems like, you know, we might have some friction right now, but he's definitely going.
But I never, if we had an argument, it was never like, God damn it, that Adam. I was always like, oh, when are we playing again? Let's get back to the music. And I remember we did a rehearsal, and it was just like, you said it. You were like, we did a rehearsal, and like I came into it like, cool, like whatever. Like, I've fought with enough band members to know you bury the hatchet. But you were like, dude, it's so good to get back to what it's really about. And that is what our connection is. That's why we cross paths. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I really got my feathers ruffled over some bullshit about the release of the live record that I look back on now, and it's just embarrassing.
Well, the funny thing is, you know, this is what I respect about you so much, too. Your work ethic and, like, the standards you hold yourself to are incredible. But it's almost like I remember there's this one like crazy cool drum solo, trading solos with the percussionist on one of the tracks, and you were like angry I was gonna release that. You were like, man, my playing is so much better. And I'm like, Adam, do you realize how killing that section of the song is? And you're like, no, it's not. I'm like, dude, it's amazing. And you know what? People tell me all the time. Let me tell you something about this. This just happened 2 days ago. So we're at Summerfest, and we had fans that have been seeing us for about 8-9 years. And a bunch of people came up to the merch tent, and they said, well, which record should we buy? And these people were standing right next to them, and they were like, our favorite record is Live Vibes. So I was like, man, he's going to play that track. I got to tell him that story. So it's like our perspective on what we're releasing, it's not ours anymore at that point. It's so it becomes somebody else's soundtrack. It becomes somebody else's, you know, thing. So, yeah, man, like it's always a pleasure to make music with you. And you're such a badass. So I always am like, yo, Adam, you're a badass. Don't worry. People are going to love what you do. You know, it's like it really is true because I know you're a perfectionist. I've seen worked with you for many a time, and like things that you hear, 99.9% people, they just don't hear those things. And like, man, like you're just a tremendous drummer. And I love that we're showcasing you on that. And let's talk about some of the other things that you were doing. You have another track called Imminence, right?
Oh, Imminence, yeah.
So tell us about that project real quick.
Well, there's a guitar player, Ariel Mann, who I am just a huge fan of. Yes, he is sexy, ladies. And he's also just ridiculous. He's just so stupidly talented.
He is so stupidly
talented.
It's
humbling just to be around the guy. And
yeah.
So I heard this thing, you know, like you're a cross of your five closest friends. And it's like, dude, if I'm a cross of anything with that guy, I'm like, I'm honored.
Get a room, you two.
Yeah, he's a composer at Disney, one of my favorite guitar players, great keyboard player. I mean,
he's a Berkeley cat, came from Israel. Just an incredible guitarist, and then he plays keys incredibly well.
Yeah.
He can write.
Yeah.
So tell us about this project.
Yeah, we played in a band together, Troop, and whenever the band would take a break, we would just hang out in the rehearsal studio and just jam together. And we really found out we had a connection really quick, just on an improvisational level, and so we started a duo, Man versus Gust.
Love
and
it.
Yeah, it's the elements, man versus nature. I'm nature boy.
You said it with such fierceness. Yeah. Well, what are we going to play here? We're going to play...
Well, this track is going to be... I really... This is one that people seem to like the most of what we've done, and he's also worked with you a lot. So
that's right. He's cool, a badass. I love him. It's great.
This is Imminence. It's a composition of his that he played guitar and did all the... production for, and then I played drums on it at my studio.
All right, before we play that, I got to do the proper intro for you.
Oh.
Here's Men versus Gus.
Who is that?
Imminence.
It's really uneven.
Anytime now.
Game.
All right. Yeah. Yeah. That was pretty badass.
Oh, thanks.
I felt like I was like in like this crazy movie that I wanted to start a battle in.
I thought I was being chased.
You did?
I have to look behind my back. That was fantastic.
Yeah, Ariel does a lot of video game stuff, and this particular tune is for the trailer for my TV show idea, Beach Shrine, that we're working on. He's the first. I'm hosting the show, and he was my first guest.
That's awesome.
When it was originally kind of slated as a web series, kind of an under-the-radar thing, just something I wanted to do. And
I remember when you had the cameras filming everything live at your studio. I remember I was there day one.
Yeah, I've been working on it for a while, and I kind of I like the do-it-yourself idea of it, that I could control it and I could film it and put the ideas out, and everyone who's seen it tells me, dude, it's a great idea, the music's amazing, your network is so great, you got to do this in a big studio and hire a professional production team.
You're like, where can I see it?
Man, I need financing. So
okay,
finance this guy already, please.
Yeah, somebody.
So where can people? Well, you know what? Let's talk about this real quick. Where can people find you?
Where can people find me?
Yeah.
Gigantor Studios Music.
Spell it, because people are dumb.
Gigantor Music or Studios Music. Thank you. Yep, that was.
You got to spell that part too, because people are like, "Wait, he didn't spell the other part."
Studios plural, music, and there's a PR video there for the studio, and some bunch of audio, and.
And tell everybody how you came up with the name of Gigantor.
Gigantor. Actually, it was from the movie Speed.
I thought it was Night of the Museum.
No, it's totally, Keanu Reeves calls one of the guys on the bus Gigantor, and I laughed out loud in the studio. I just thought it was such an awesome nickname, and so I was like, man,
I thought it was Night at the Museum.
I thought it was from that guy with
Owen
He-Man.
Wilson. Oh, He-Man.
Wasn't a He-Man.
There was a cartoon Gigantor, a big metal robot.
Yeah. See, Adam, we've all been like,
he looked like a
years.
Skull, yeah. Right? He looked like He-Man.
That's funny.
Nope, it was Keanu Reeves' nickname for somebody on the bus.
Who knew? Yeah. Who knew? Now, Adam, I've always wanted to ask you this because you have, like we were just talking about this off the air, you have like one of the biggest pockets as a drummer. I mean, you really do. Like when I say pocket, I mean like the groove of a song or, between the sound of a drummer and a bass player and a band. Whenever I play with you, it's just like this huge pocket. Now you're 6'8". Do you think that contributes to the power? Tell us about that real quick.
I hit the kick drum hard.
No, you do, and it's always harder than everybody else.
Man, I hear so many drummers that they'll play drums on the stage, and then the front of house guy will bring up the drums, and then the mix is right.
Right.
But from the stage, it's like, dude, where is the freaking kick drum, like,
right.
Oh my god, you gotta get some balance in your, I mean, you really need to mix yourself on the drums, especially live, because like stage volume is what people are hearing more than what's in the monitors. And yeah, if you're in a series of auditions with a bunch of other drummers and it's a groove thing and your kick drum isn't slamming, that people aren't, like, beat one isn't just like, you know.
And most people don't know that the kick drum is really what leads the band. Mm-hmm. That's the driving, that's the driver of the bus.
Yeah, and so many times the kick drum is stuffed full of pillows and stuff. Yeah. I mean, you gotta, like, overpower whatever kit you're playing on. So, you definitely need to have dynamics in your kick. You definitely need to feather it for jazz. And so developing that sensitivity to dynamics to be really quiet for some styles and then being able to beat the hell out of it for others is a big technical.
And the reason I ask this is because I play with so many drummers, and like sometimes if a drummer is to get that same like intensity out of the kick drum, it's like they literally like are jumping off their drum throne, and I've never seen you jump off your drum throne. So I'm like, it must be because his legs are so long that he can just sit there and just fire it out.
Man, Ed Soap's molar bass drum technique, it is the best possible way to play the kick drum. It's like gives you a maximum effect with minimal effort, and then also it gives you like a real sensitivity to lower dynamics. So I've seen a lot of different kind of ideas and philosophies on bass drum technique, but the molar technique gives you the least amount of time invested with the maximum result. So
awesome.
I think for hands, I mean, there's such a spectrum on the kit of, I mean, there's so many more things to hit and so many more angles, and so I really feel like technique of the hands is more important to study than the diversity of techniques in the kick drum, because basically the pedal's only going one direction.
Right.
So I know
your hands can be all over the place.
Yeah, so definitely hands is super important, but the fundamentals of kick drum, I feel like the molar technique for bass drum, it gives you the most options. And I've seen a lot of like six-step studies for kick drum and stuff. It's like, man, I just learned molar. And
that's it.
Dynamics.
That's all you need. You hear that, drummers?
Yeah, it's the best route too. And I mean, it gives you maximum volume. Because there are all these like kind of finesse strokes I've seen people use, and like, man, the singer in the band, they want the hands to have more dynamics because the kick drum they want to feel, but it's out of the range of the vocal.
So what you're saying is one day I'll be able to do this.
Yeah, the kick at the end of that needs to be a little stronger.
I love it. I want to get to all your tracks. So what are we playing next? We're going to play Metro, right?
Let's totally do this one. This one I've kind of wanted to set up with a story.
All right.
A little bit. There's Nina Lares is a singer I've worked with for a long time.
Nice. Hey, made it. It's 2 weeks in a row, y'all.
He just threw the bottle in the trash.
This was recorded at my studio, and whenever I hear this, I had a, life-changing incident, an injury that I've been recovering from for a long time. And this was kind of midway through my recovery. I had to play this up-tempo swing song. And I remember the moment, like, I was choking on it. My hands were just not working.
Well, I want to talk 10 seconds about that injury. Mm-hmm. He walked through a window and cut his hand, right?
It was a glass door on a gig.
Wow.
And it was loading gear. It was open. And then the last trip, somebody closed it, and I walked into it. My hardware case is shattered. Really gory. nerve damage. I was in casts for a couple of weeks. I can't even describe how horrible it is to have your hands in casts
for drummer.
Especially as a drummer.
That's like the worst.
2 months, and it was a year that I was told not to play at all. And then it was, and I remember I did a bunch of gigs that I would only play brushes because I couldn't really play sticks. The rebound would fuck up my hands. But I would still play with you and suffer through it.
Oh, dude. I love this guy. I just want to hug you all the time, Adam.
I adapted my technique to actually hold the stick in my back two fingers. And so it was horrible technique.
The funny thing is, Adam would kill it in rehearsal. Mm-hmm. And we'd all be like, damn, it's so good to play with you, Adam. He'd be like, yeah, my hands are just not where they... I'd be like, you are killing it. You're killing it.
Yeah, if I worked really hard to sound good. It was not fun playing the drums for a lot of years.
Well, let's play this track.
This one, I did two takes of it, and shit was really awful for me. And then I remember, like, it was one of those moments where just like, this is it. You got to go for it. And this is the track that came out. So
awesome.
Kind of proud of it.
Here's Metro.
Studios recorded at my place. So yeah, check it out.
Very nice. So, Adam, let's talk about a little bit of that transition of you kind of recovering from your injury.
Whenever I hear this track, I remember, like, being in my drum room and just, like, struggling to make it through this tune. But it's like, wow, I got to the end of it, and it came out good. And
dude, you can't even tell.
The drums on this. It was so physically stressful to, like, the way I had to play, it was just exhausting. And
right.
It was not fun. It was painful to play.
I wasn't expecting you to play so many subdivisions with how you set that up. I was like, oh, it's going to be like a slow jazz. And then you said it was like upbeat. I was like, okay.
Yeah, I remember they had this. I should tell you it was on. It was Nina Laris is the singer. We do a lot of like covers, songs, and different styles, jazzy stuff.
She's great.
I love her voice. Good friend of mine. Play a lot. Dave Schultz was the keyboard player, and it was his idea to arrange it. And Tim Kobza played guitar, Eric Sittner bass.
He was my guitar teacher. Big shout out to Tim Kobza.
Yeah, wow. USC
good dude.
Guitar faculty.
Good dude.
And Terry Nunn, it's a Berlin tune. And Terry Nunn had it, played the song on her show because she liked it.
So that's awesome.
That was kind of cool. So this was a moment where I was like, okay, well, I definitely am not enjoying playing, but I'm dreaming of enjoying playing again. But like, if I really dig in and mentally just overcome this kind of physical issue I have, that I'll be able to eventually enjoy playing. And Tony Bronigal, unbelievable blues drummer, he's helped me a lot studying Spivak. Kind of helped me to get back into playing with less strain and stress and pain and exhaustion. And acupuncture at Yosan Clinic with Alec Bridges and Lorraine Crampton was huge, huge.
I had no idea you were going through all this.
Oh,
treatment,
weekly
man. Weekly
acupuncture for years.
And we were playing together during all this, producing records out of your studio.
I did not talk about it a lot. And when I talked about it, wanted to change the subject. And, it was tough for me, but I learned a lot.
I'm sure I'm not the only musician that has played with you that didn't notice. We knew that you went through it. I knew you because you and I talked about it, but I never have heard your pocket, your vibe, your energy, your intensity playing the drums ever suffer. And maybe in your mind, you were like, I can't go for things in the same way, but I never heard it. And I played with you for a long time.
I would have strain in my right hand, and that would make me rush. But then I learned to have kind of countermeasures to drag if I felt this tension happen. So it's just a constant, like, I wasn't thinking about the music. I wasn't thinking about...
You're just trying to get through the songs.
Yeah, and then, it's not... If I was going to be miserable in my career, I would have been a banker, So, but I did dream. I kept seeing the progress. And then, man, working with Tony, I can't say enough about the guy. I mean, he saw me play on this blues cruise. And he was like, yeah, you play great.
You can say booze cruise.
And he saw me play. And he's like, yeah, but you have some tension in your right hand, And I told him the story. He's like, dude, just come over to my place. I'm not going to charge you. I know you're going through hell right now. And he was really an
That's awesome.
That guy. Thank God for Tony Bronigal. I love you.
And, he's like, I love you too, Adam.
And then I've just had a lesson with Bruce Becker. And that's And that Spivak is more a middle finger that I was studying with. technique.
I'm like, what are we talking about here?
I was going to ask about that.
It's mostly between thumb and middle finger, and then the Freddie Gruber technique, which I'm trying to get into. I just had one lesson with Bruce and been going through his video, and I want to start lessons with him again. But he's super like, man, if you're going to study with me, you better do it every week. So trying to get up to that point. But it's been a lot of recovery, and I'm really happy with where I am now, which is kind of why I want to do more media stuff. Beach Shrine, I want to do a TV show about people I work with in my network, and 3D drumming and instructional series, and then more philosophical, more things about kind of overcoming obstacles like I have in my life, and with the 3D drumming blog that I want to be coming out with. It's all in the works. And anybody out there who's interested in anything I'm doing and is good in logic or film production and wants to be part of my
come team, on down.
Please give me a call. I am drowning in it, and I need all the help I can get.
Let's play this last song real quick.
This last one is the 19-Foot Trio band I'm in with my favorite bass player in the world, Tim LaFave, and Cameron Morgan from North Texas. We've been playing together.
Crazy talented musicians.
And I played with them each separately a lot, and then we decided to do a trio record at my studio.
Tim LaFave played bass on Fade Away with NK.
He's
such a badass. And he's also the bassist for Tedeschi Trucks Band.
Played on Black Star, David Bowie.
That's right.
I'm in love with this. I've listened more to him than any other bass player alive or dead.
He's so musical.
Donnie McCaslin stuff is awesome. All the avant-garde group shit in New York, like Rudder and Wayne Krantz, yeah, and Boomish, love it to death, and it was great to get to play with these guys. And here's a track from 19 Foot Trio, recorded at Gigantor Studios.
Awesome.
Nice. Spaghetti Eastern. Yeah. All right, real quick, Adam, let's tell the world where everybody can find you one last time.
Sure. Gigantor Studios Music and AdamGuss.com for now. And, yeah, you guys said you might be willing to have me back. I
of course.
Talk more about things
yes.
when I kind
dude,
of
dude, you know
company.
You're going to always come back. Okay. You got a revolving door, man. You're gonna come back in maybe 6 months and tell us about all the extraordinary things you're doing. On behalf of Dimitri Cerny, thank you for filling in for Eddie Pence.
Oh, my pleasure.
Gust, you're a wonderful guest and wonderful person, man, and an extraordinary drummer. We'll have you back. I'm Nicky Carulla. We'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nicky Carulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.